This is Business Women Australia podcast, featuring industry leaders who bring their wealth of expertise from diverse areas to help you build a successful business. Now, onto the show. And welcome to another episode of Business Women Australia podcast. I'm your host, Anne-Marie Cross. Now, my guest today says success is what happens when preparation meets knowledge. And joining me on today's show is Dr. Sasha Fulton. Now, Sasha is an accredited sports scientist, preparation specialist for athletes and advisor to high-performing business teams and executives. She holds a PhD with the Australian Institute of Sport, and she has helped prepare numerous Olympic teams. She's also worked at the WA Institute of Sport, assisting the athletic improvement of Olympic and aspiring Olympic hopefuls. Now, she is passionate about helping ambitious people to unlock their potential and reach their goals. She is a surf lifesaver, a keen athlete, and an adventure enthusiast, having hiked to Mount Everest Base Camp and completed 1,700 kilometers on foot over 62 days of Camino de Santiago. Now, on today's show, Sasha is going to share lessons from the field of sports science to improve business and organizational team performance. She's going to talk about the science underlying high performance strategies, as well as the practical lessons learned that can be translated to business management, as well as the characteristics of high performing teams and individuals. Welcome, Sasha.
Good morning. Thank you.
You must be very busy at the moment. We've got a lot of information and lots of exciting things happening in the world of the Olympic sports. Tell me, have you always been interested? It sounds from that introduction that even as a young child, you were always fascinated and involved with sports. Is that a correct assumption?
Yeah, definitely. I think it was probably more the movement of the body. It was probably more interested in this body that we've been blessed with and what it can do. Yes. So if all the, you know, if everything aligns, if we treat it correctly, if we apply the knowledge that we know of sports science, what can this body achieve?
Yes, wow. And, you know, speaking about the Olympics, of course, one of the things that we know when we get to that level, when the sporting individual gets to that level, there's certain things that you can do that just allows the body to operate at maximum. And I love the way that you are now bringing what you've learned in that particular area and transitioning that to business and teams and performance. What happened there? Was that something that you naturally saw, or did you just start using some of the principles within the business space? How did that occur?
I think it was probably a little bit of a light bulb moment, to be honest. And it actually, it occurred on the Camino. So I sort of left when I got made redundant from the Western Australian Institute of Sport in 2018. And I went on this sort of soul searching journey across Europe. And I think there was a moment where I sort of realized that I didn't need to be perfect every day. I just needed to get up in the morning, put my shoes on, follow the signs, and I'd reach my destination. So I think there was a bit of a moment there that went, well, all of these strategies that we help coach our Olympic athletes in, why can't we transfer these to other aspects? Why can't I prepare a school student for their exams the same way I'd prepare an Olympic athlete for competition? Why can't I help coach businesses and organizations to improve performance the same way that I'd prepare an Olympic athlete for competition?
Yeah, wow. And of course, we're going to talk about some of those lessons in a moment. But before we do that, can I ask, there's obviously practical things that we can do. Obviously, in sport, there is things to do practically with the body and whatever that sport that you're in. A lot has to do with mindset too, I would imagine. Both are important, yes?
Absolutely. And I think athletes almost have this distinct advantage to use their minds, where it's not such a given space when you walk into an office and your performance is kind of behind a computer, if yes. you like. The achievements and the outcomes are essentially the same. We're still trying to achieve the same thing. But the athlete has to, you know, they've got to overcome things such as performing on the world stage. So knowing that when they're competing, you know, potentially if it's the Olympic stage, they've got millions of people worldwide that are watching their performance. So I think that, yeah, the mindset and it's, you know, we know now it's not enough just to prepare the body to compete at the very highest level. And essentially, you know, when we reach an Olympic final, so you've got, you know, eight of the world's top sprinters in that 100-meter race, at the end of the day, the physical talent is very, very, very similar. Often what it can come down to is the mindset. You know, who wants it the most? Who's prepared to go out and get it?
Yeah, and what you're saying to yourself too. I mean, I know if I think back to just some of the movies that you see, and I mean aspects of movies we know are Hollywoodized, if you will, but really that whole what you think can really impact, as you say, how you perform on that day.
Absolutely, and you'll watch with elite athletes. They talk about this sort of alter ego effect, that there's a time where the athlete will suddenly switch on, and they know that it's actual game time. Yes. So great examples: Rafa Nadal. You know, when he pulls on his headband, that for him is his moment to say, you know, game on. This is ready to go. Usain Bolt. At the start of the 100 metres, you'll often, you know, you'll watch him, he'll bring a finger up to his lips to silence the crowd. But I think that sign is actually a sign for him as well to say, quieten your mind, it's business time now.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. Well, those in itself, I think, can be huge lessons from the sport, from sports and people who are doing that we can bring into business. And as you've said, we don't really think about that so much in business. Yet, I think moving forward from what's happened in the world, you know, around the globe, we need to be much more mindful around what are we bringing with us into the workplace, into meetings and boardrooms when it comes to what we're thinking. And as we know, our thinking is impacted by emotions. All of that's so important. Not often we something that we talk about, but I think moving forward, very, very important. What are some things that we can be mindful of to help us improve business and organizational team performance, Sasha?
Absolutely, absolutely. So, I mean, you know, a couple of things that come to mind. And again, the elite athlete almost has this, they've got the greatest excuse, if you like, to be super prepared. You know, no one, when it comes to sleep, say, if we talk about sleep now, you know, we're constantly telling athletes or encouraging athletes and the wider community to get a minimum of 8 hours sleep per night. Mm-hmm. And if you like, you know, everyone knows how hard an athlete works. And so there's sort of every excuse for the athlete to get that solid 8 hours. Whereas I don't know that happens so much in business. With people actually getting the amount of sleep they need. And then when you're coming into a boardroom, when you're having to make critical decisions about team productivity or, you know, the next strategic sales move, you know, sleep can be a really defining factor on your clarity of thought, how you interact with people around you, and how you're getting the best out of yourself.
Yes, and decisions too, being able to make quick decisions by, you know, having all of the information, asking the right questions can be inhibited, if you will, if you're not getting the right sleep. And isn't it interesting that in the sporting arena, the sports people are encouraged to get a lot of sleep, whereas often in the business world, not all the time, but in some instances, and I've just recently spoken to some people in the US, the people who work really hard, work really long hours, stay up, they seem to be looked at and rewarded more in yep. comparison to those people that are actually taking time out and resting. And it goes to show, science proves that rest is so important if you want to maximize performance.
Absolutely. And I want to say there's potentially a changing culture in the business world now. I think with this, the younger generation coming in who are much more about balance and about life, not just about business. And so I think we are naturally seeing kind of a change there where it's okay to leave on time. Yes. You know, it's not, you're not going to get a brownie point for staying at work for an extra 2 hours. Or going into work on a Sunday and negating time with family. You know, I think it is becoming more acceptable, but there's definitely, you know, for our elite athletes, we sort of okay it even more so. They've trained really hard, so therefore, you know, we must ensure that they have a big meal, they have a lot of sleep, and we really look after them. Whereas, yeah, I think sometimes in business, there's not that sort of, there's not the same attention put on those really critical factors.
Yes. Something else that I'd love to get your opinion on as well, and I think this beautifully models across in the sporting arena and in business, and this is the whole concept of time. Now, if I think of my daughter, she is working with a coach. She is going into competition next year for bodybuilding, and one of the things that she needed to do every single day was walk either 20,000 or 30,000 steps. Anyway, a coach now has said, no, we need to decrease that, and she says, thank goodness, because it takes hours.
Sure.
And so in the athletic space, it's how many of this, how many of that, rather than time. Yes, in the business world, we focus a lot on time, but performance is not necessarily time-based, but rather how can you do things more effectively and efficiently in time? Speak a bit about that, because I think that's a huge shift in the business space.
Absolutely. Oh, look, absolutely. And I mean, it's really interesting you mentioned that. I literally just had an email from a client yesterday who I am training for a half Ironman. And one of her questions, so I've sent through her program. Now, a half Ironman, for those of you who don't know what a half Ironman is, it's a triathlon. It involves a 1.9-kilometre swim, a 90.1-kilometre bike ride, and a 21.1-kilometre run. So depending on your ability, it's going to take, you know, anywhere between 5 and 7 hours to complete, say. Now, the question that came from her was, well, hold on, I'm really worried because I don't have a 5-hour bike ride every weekend to complete. I've given her, I think the maximum I've given her is a 3-hour bike ride. And so my question back to her was, well, are we training you for a half Ironman or for a full Ironman? Because I think definitely we can, you know, you can, time can get away from us, if you like, and we can do things too long. So one thing in the elite athlete space is overtraining and actually doing, you know, doing more than we need to do. But of course, at the other end, we know also that, you know, we only get to touch in with athletes for a small period of time per day. So your daughter's coach doesn't have access to your daughter kind of 24 hours a day. So he or she needs to be really strategic with what they do in the time that they do have access. So, you know, definitely in sport, you know, we know that the body is not invincible. We know that injuries do happen. We know that burnout happens. Athletes, and we've seen it in swimming a lot. A lot of our past Olympic athletes will talk about this sort of black line fever where, you know, mentally they're just so incredibly drained from the hours and hours of training we've put in. So I think over time in the sporting world, we are getting more strategic with how many sort of hours per day we have athletes dedicate to training, whereas potentially in the business world, it's still a concept of more is better.
Yeah. And what is interesting about that is because if I look at, if you just see different people's styles, I know for me, I work in spurts, if you will, like I'll work for a full couple of hours, really full on, and then I need to take a break. Some days, depending, and this is where I think as individuals, we need to be very mindful and monitoring our energy. And you know, sometimes we feel like pushing through. The body's a good messenger and it'll be sharing with you where it's at. And if we continue to ignore it, the body will take things into its own hands and often
absolutely end
up with an illness or some form to stop you from continuing to move forward. However, you know, in the business world, I think if we continue to measure and monitor everyone on the same, it's same factors, like, well, you know, you have to be at work at 8 hours and fill those complete 8 hours. Whereas someone who is able to efficiently and effectively complete what they needed to do within 5 hours, why continue to push them for 8 hours? You couldn't, you know, unnecessarily burn them out.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's, but you know, it's potentially where we've seen, I think, just a change almost in the last 18 months with COVID. Funnily enough, you know, I think I want to say that's one of the benefits that's come from COVID. So more and more employees are realizing that, one, they can effectively do their work from home, so they don't necessarily need to go into the office, which then cuts back on travel time. It sort of cuts back on all those chats around the coffee, the coffee machine or the water fountain. And I think there probably is a realization that, you know, number one, you can be just as, if you're efficient, if you're fresh, if you're energized, if you're, you know, if your nutrition has been looked after, if you're well hydrated, if you've had a lot of sleep, if you've been exercising, you've got more energy and you can be just as effective in that 5 hour space that you might have been in an 8 hour space. And if anything, you know, yourself being at home, you get to work sort of hard and efficiently for a couple of hours. And then when the camera is turned off, you can really kind of relax and just be you. You can put your UGG boots on, or you can, you know, there's there's a classic, you know, there's been a sort of a classic pictures on social media and things of seeing, you know, the executive, you know, the executive director sitting in his suit, but actually underneath he's wearing his boxer shorts and his slippers because he hasn't, you know, he's just put the top half on for the Zoom meeting.
It's interesting that you should say that, because how many people realized that spending an hour, and in some instances an hour and a half, fighting traffic just to get to work can really deplete your energy, can't it? And so because that no longer has been an issue for some people, whereas their commute to work and passing traffic may have been, you know, their child going up the stairs while they're going down the stairs, and then they're pretty much at work working, can realize, my goodness, I actually feel a lot more fresh than. So, yeah, I can definitely some benefits, incredible benefits in that area too. And it's wonderful to see that there's a change in the guard, if you will, that people are starting to see. Well, this is something that we need to be mindful of, because moving forward, as you said, a lot more people are far more looking out for that work-life balance, because they know that it's going to impact how they show up. Let's talk a little bit about some of the things that we need to be mindful of when it comes to business management. What are some of the practical lessons as leaders when it comes to really maximizing how we're leading a team that maybe we can borrow from what some of these Olympic athletes and what you've been doing with them that we can translate into the business world?
Sure. Funnily enough, I thought about this the other day, and I thought about when we see photographs of elite athletes, on the whole, we tend to see them, there's three different scenarios that we'll see the elite athlete in. So we either see them during an event where some adversity has happened. They've fallen off the horse, they've crashed the bike, they've had a particularly nasty tackle and they've done an ACL. And so you're seeing these, you know, photos of sort of adversity. Yes. Then you've got moments of success. So we're very good at capturing moments of success. So the fist pump, you know, at the end of the race, or standing atop of the medal dais. And then three, I think we see these really beautiful moments of pride. And I think we've seen that a lot. Just so our team for Tokyo, which is finally going ahead, you know, we're starting to, athletes are starting to be officially qualified. And I don't know if you've seen on social media, but they've created an airline ticket. Mm-hmm. So it's just a standard boarding pass for a plane, but it's you're going to the Olympic Games with the athlete's name on it. And I think, you know, so we're seeing a lot of photos of the athlete wearing the green and gold tracksuit. You know, they've got a flag. There's the Australian flag nearby with the emblem. And they've got this ticket with their name on it going to the Olympic Games. So I think there's a few things in there, and I mean, we can unpack all three of them or one of them, but one of those in particular, I think, is that celebrating success. And I wonder, I think athletes have a really unique opportunity to celebrate success, one, on a regular basis, and two, in its immediacy. So the minute the race is won, the arms are up in the air, or you know, the arms are out wide. The minute the race is won, there's the big smile on the face. Or sometimes we'll see, often is Djokovic, some of the tennis players will throw themselves onto the ground to sort of, and then that outpouring of emotion. And I don't know that we always give employees that opportunity to do so in business. So do we really celebrate those, and not just the big successes, but do we celebrate the really small successes along the way? So I think that's definitely, you know, something that we can take from elite athletes.
Yes. And even individually too, I would imagine it's important. And I'm sure, you know, the athletes are encouraged, even during training, if they're able to push past their best time, all of those little things are actually milestones, aren't they? And often as business, we will go from one project to another without congratulating or taking time to acknowledge. And I think it's important to do for other team members, but also for yourself too, because to rush from one project to another, and often we do that, don't we? We're not acknowledging, yes. Hey, this is what I've done. That's good. We're on the right track. I think it's important.
Yeah, well, look, we know that, I mean, from a scientific perspective, there is a release of chemicals in the brain. So when we've achieved something that makes us feel good, there's a release of dopamine. And it's been, you know, well proved that if we can acknowledge that, we get a greater release. And once you've had that release, it feels really good, you know, so you kind of want more of it. So then you're more likely to start behaving in a way that is going to, you know, release that chemical again, if you like.
Yeah. Something that I do want to talk, I was going to ask you, I would love to touch on, well, what happens in the moments where something does happen, because there's often disappointment in ourselves as well. But in the athletic world, you have that whole area of other people weighing into things from the media. And in some instances, you know, you have to learn to switch off. I'm sure that's an area that a lot of other athletes are supported in. The reason I want to talk a little bit more about that in the business sense as well is, yes, it's great to celebrate and really, you know, high five for the achievements. And it's also important to again acknowledge the areas where we may have failed, but not look at it as it's an opportunity for growth, if you will. And then the criticism too, how do we manage that or get to a point where we don't allow that to impact our identity, what we think about, and how we move forward? I'd love you to share some insights on that.
Sure. I think, look, again, you know, there's no Olympic athlete or professional athlete on this planet that does it all themselves. Mm-hmm. There's a huge team, a support network behind them. So there's, you know, there's the whole band of physical therapies sort of holding the athlete together in terms of, you know, the massage therapist and the sports medicine doctor and the psychologist and the nutritionist and the strength and conditioning coach, as well as you've got, you know, they're a teammate. So even if you're competing in an individual sport, often that's part of a team. So there are other players, you've got the coaches, you've got the managers, you've got the support staff. So there really is, there's a huge band of people behind you, and you've got, I guess you've sort of, you've got the opportunity then to excel in all of these areas. So the nutritionist is constantly working on you to make sure that when you go into an event, you've got maximal energy levels. And when you recover from an event, you're recovering as fast as possible by eating foods that are going to kind of induce recovery. You know, your coach will make sure that they've tapered you correctly for the event. So when you're coming into, again, I sort of possibly get the sense that in business, in the lead up to a big event, potentially businesses just work harder and harder and harder, whereas we can't do that with an athlete. There's what we call a taper, where we keep the intensity high, but we drop the volume off. So if you like, it would be the number of work hours per day gets less, so the athlete can be as fresh as possible for the big event. I'm not sure that always happens in business.
Yeah, and it doesn't, if you think of the incredible support team behind an Olympic athlete or an athlete that's really performing at that high level. Businesses, I mean, I'm sure you would talk to a business owner who is maybe constantly going from meeting to meeting, who's constantly thinking, they're, you know, constantly having to make these high decisions, high-level decisions that's going to impact not only team across the board but many millions of dollars often, or even if it's a smaller budget, there's a high expectation. And if we're thinking to ourselves, well, what support am I getting? Am I looking after myself nutritionally? Do I know what foods are going to really help me maximize my output? Input and output, we've heard of that term before. I mean, I'm just thinking, my goodness, I don't think as business owners or people in the business space are probably even considering, what sort of support am I getting, and where may I be missing out? You know, we've heard that saying, we are as strong as our weakest link. What if the weakest link is that you're not getting enough sleep, or you're actually eating the wrong foods, or, you know, whatever it is? And if we don't get the kind of the support of someone who can see that from, you know, the externally, then we may not ever put into place any strategy to be able to help us grow in that particular area. Yes.
Absolutely. And I think what happens kind of as a result of that is athletes, you know, we talk about athletes as being very good. They have high resilience. And it's a very sort of, it's a popular term, if you like. And it's interesting just to unpack resilience itself and work out, well, what is resilience and how do you build resilience? I mean, you could look at a rugby player and say, well, it's pretty easy to see how they build resilience, because they get pummeled into the ground and then they have to stand back up again and go again. And surely if you do that 100 times in a match, you build resilience. Now, that's a very physical way of building resilience, but how do you have the opportunity to build resilience as a team member? And I guess one thing, you know, that athletes do well is having that recovery space as well. So once there's been, you know, a hard training session or a hard block of training or a big competition, we're always very conscious of making sure that the athlete has time out. And I think it's really, it's in that time out where you get the opportunity to reflect on what you've achieved, to prepare yourself for what's to come. That's where you can build resilience, and that's where businesses can build resilience. Whereas if we're, like we do very well, if we're just constantly moving from project to project, and we're not really giving ourselves that boundary or that time to just sit and reflect and build, and even if it means that there's a period of not achieving for a couple of days or for a week, I think we'll often find that that's going to help productivity and performance in the long run.
Yeah, and I'd imagine when you are working with an athlete that maybe they had, you know, there was a competition or there may have been an injury, they don't just say to that athlete, well, get a good night's rest and we'll see you tomorrow. There are plans, there are stages to really help. Now, if we look at that as the business in the business world, and if a team member or a team has been working on a project that did not necessarily have the outcome that we wanted, rather than going in there and berating people, not that they would, but, you know, you would encourage them to step back. What was missing? What can we do better? And helping them learn and identify, I think even in that process, that helps build resilience, doesn't it? Because we can use that approach when we're, you know, maybe experiencing other challenges in the workplace, yes?
Yeah, definitely. And again, I think that's, you know, that is where sport, so that whole, you know, kind of overcoming adversity, if you will. And it's, you know, you'll see it a hot topic sort of in Australia at the moment with AFL teams. And they're being questioned as to when the best player, you know, when that best player is going to get back on the field. And I mean, the science that is behind the number of playing minutes that an athlete can afford to do, the science that has gone into that, and a whole multidisciplinary approach with your sports medicine doctor and your physiotherapist, and often, I mean, it can come down to, you know, there was a classic one with Michael Jordan, obviously, you know, probably one of the world's greatest basketball players, and one of the world's greatest athletes, shall we say. And I mean, often for him, it was how many playing minutes can we afford? We want him for the whole time. We want him on the court for the whole time, but we can't, especially if he's carrying a little bit of a niggle. We know that we can't afford to do that. So how are we going to be strategic? You know, when are we going to have him on the court? And when are we going to make that really hard decision to pull him off the court? Even if he's saying, I'm fine, I'm good to go, but if we've got the science behind us to say, we calculated 5.5 minutes of playtime and we're at 5.5 minutes, you know, it's time to back off. Whereas, again, I think in business there'd be that, because there's not the physical body that's actually on the line, there'd be that tendency to push through. Yes. Even though the mind itself is something that still needs, you know, fine-tuning and you know, to be well looked after.
I was speaking to someone, and I think it was today, that someone mentioned that, you know, when you're thinking about just the thoughts and concern, anxiety and so forth, a lot of that mental activity can be draining. Can absolutely be draining. And similarly, when you're making decisions, your brain, and I don't know this if you've got any this kind of stats behind that, but just thinking, the brain uses energy, doesn't it, to do those thoughts. And we can't continue to ask the brain to continue operating at the highest level possible without rest and without watering the brain, if you will, you know.
Definitely, but
I was going to say hydrating, not watering the brain.
Yes, watering, hydrating the brain, absolutely. Yeah. There's so much there just in that one point, but, you know, one thing that comes to mind automatically for me, you'll often hear an athlete at the end of a competition say that they don't remember what just happened. I'm thinking specifically of Kate Campbell, our Olympic swimmer. Now, she broke the world record. She's broken the world record in the 100-meter freestyle on a few different occasions. But this one particular race, you know, her first response was, wow, I can't believe I just did that. I can't really remember the race. Lauren Mitchell, world champion on floor, women's artistic gymnastics, who I had the honour of working with for a number of years, you know, she would often say, I barely remember my routine. And it's so ingrained. They've practiced it over and over and over again that it's incredibly automatic. And I think sometimes, so you could take a world record as just being broken, but there's barely any mental output that's happened, because for the body, for the mind, it's just another day in the office, if you like. It's just what I've been trained to do. And sure, the stars have aligned and everything's come together and the preparation has been absolutely perfect. But, you know, there is that that moment where everything has come together to such a degree that they barely remember what has just happened. And especially now, so the swimming trials have sort of literally just finished for the Australian Olympic swim team. And whilst Tokyo is literally around the corner, those athletes will have, you know, a small amount of time off. It won't be long. It will probably only be a couple of days. But after such a huge emotional high of making Olympic Games, you know, not just the physical taxation on the body, but the mental as well, then, you know, we know that they need that small amount of time out before they can, before we can ask of them again, if you like.
Yes. Well, luckily, and this is being a bit sarcastic and humorous at the same time, they'll be able to rest when they're in the quarantine queue or coming through that.
Oh, goodness.
And that's a whole other pressure as well, but I'm sure they would have been prepared for that. I know that we're just about at the end of our conversation. I've loved speaking with you today, and I know we've only just scratched the surface, but I'm certain have piqued the interest of people. So I will in a moment, Sasha, get you to share how people can find out more. But when we're talking about the characteristics of high-performing teams and individuals, let's just list what would you say are the top three, if you can narrow this down to the top three characteristics of a high-performing team that as leaders we should be looking at really instilling and building in our teams.
Yeah, I think you can categorize this into sort of three categories. And I've put 4 points under each category. Yes. So I think there's first category would be considered building. So being able to utilize diversity in your team, you know, especially when we're talking about team sports, we're not always looking for the fastest athlete. We're not always looking for the strongest athlete. We're not looking for the world's best athletes to come into one team. We're looking for what that one individual can deliver, you know, to a team. Improving systems, practicing continuous learning and having clear goals are another three things that I see sort of on a daily basis with the athletic world, and wonder whether businesses can take those forward as well. Then I think you have bridging. So one point I've got down here is managing stakeholders. Now, again, when it comes to especially professional sport, you know, it's not just about the team and the sports medicine team behind them. There's also sponsors, and they need to be sort of managed effectively with the input that they have to athletes. Creating purposes, you know, really creating a purpose for your team. So what is the end goal? Managing work and deadlines, and I've got down here again celebrating success together, and recognizing contributions that everyone has made, because very rarely does one individual achieve. You know, it's all about the team that they have behind them. And then lastly, I've got down is buffering. So I think that ability to kind of build trust, communicate clearly, respect each other, you know, are vital points that, again, you see very clearly on the sporting field. Share leadership, being agile, and having those very defined roles and responsibilities. I'll tell you a super quick story. The one that just springs to mind, which actually doesn't come from the sporting sense at all, but it was President Obama visited NASA, the space station. This is a true story. And he came across a cleaner, and she, you know, she was carrying a mop and she had a bucket, so she was clearly a cleaner. And he asked her, "What do you do here? What is your role?" And she said, "I'm here to send a man to the moon." And I thought that was just brilliant. Yeah. As a nice way of summarizing that thought.
Yeah, it's brilliant because that's right. She is part of the team, that keeps
absolutely
the workplace in a state that people are able to optimize all of the people who are, you know, maybe communicating. I love the way that you've shared that, because how many of us within the workplace have heard others say, or maybe we've been people who have said, oh, I don't really have a role, I just do X, Y, and Z. Well, it doesn't
absolutely
matter, the owner or the CEO, you are all contributing your skills, gifts, talents, knowledge, the whole lot, to support the organization. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
I'd love today's conversation. What is the best way for people to find out more about you, your work? How can they connect with you?
Sure. Well, I've got a webinar coming up in a couple of weeks with Lynn Hawkins from BWA. So that will be up on the Business Women Australia sort of Facebook page and website. I have a website. So my business is called Peak Preparation. You can find that at www.peakpreparation.com.au. And I'm fairly regular across the social media channels of LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and giving us just a snapshot into what your world was like working with athletes at the high level, Olympic level, and how we can really embrace and bring some of those principles and strategies that you used with them to support them and maximizing their performance and what they did into the workplace. And look forward to learning more as we continue to follow you across the socials. Thanks so much again for coming on the show.
Thanks, Anne-Marie. Thank you.
You've been listening to Business Women Australia podcast. Want to become part of a dynamic collective of women who are passionate about business success and personal growth? Go to businesswomenaustralia.com.au/membership to apply. That's businesswomenaustralia.com.au/membership.